In Kosovo, the anti-establishment left-wing party that calls itself Self-Determination has won a landslide victory in parliamentary elections, the biggest victory, I think, since, for many a year. The party is led by a former prime minister and erstwhile radical activist, Albin Kurti. It's the sixth, that's right, it's the sixth election in 14 years for a partially recognised European state. And its travails are part of the ongoing fallout of the terrible wars which saw Yugoslavia disintegrate in 1992. The Western Balkans, yes, remain troubled. The region mired in political corruption, economies are weak, and there's a mass exodus of young people in search of a better life. To tell us more about Kosovo and the election and the broader issues in the area, we're joined by Marko Pralic. Marko is an analyst with that fine outfit, the International Crisis Group, a former professor from Central European University, and he also worked at the International Crime Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. We're also joined by Tim Judah, London-based journalist and author who covers the Balkans for The Economist. Tim's covered the war in the former Yugoslavia, written 1, 2, 3 books on the area with a particular focus on Serbia and Kosovo. Marko, before we dive into the election results, can you give the listeners a brief overview of the current status of Kosovo?
Sure. I think you've summed it up pretty well yourself. Kosovo's what used to be a province of Serbia, populated mostly by Albanians, so people who speak a totally different language, who historically were treated quite badly by the government in Belgrade. And in the 90s, they were persecuted violently, which led to NATO intervening to protect them in 1999, and to their decision to declare their independence from Serbia in 2008. And as you said, it's about half the countries of the world recognize that independence; the other half don't, and the half that doesn't includes big important countries like Russia, China, which enjoy a veto in the United Nations, and 5 European Union member states who block Kosovo from joining that body as well. So it's in a kind of limbo until it can sort out its relations with Serbia.
It's like looking at a Rubik's cube someone's taken a hammer to. Marko, the election results, if you please.
Well, it's an overwhelming win for the self-determination movement. The biggest win in Kosovo's history. They seem likely to win an outright majority, or perhaps just short of that, in parliament, which would allow them to form a government without making a coalition. So it's really it's a kind of referendum on the government or the misgovernment of the past 20 years, the parties that have been running the show, and it's, I think, a statement by the people of Kosovo that they don't want that anymore.
Now, it's a new generation party, isn't it? Very nationalistic, very progressive, left-leaning, and they're young, anti-corruption, and very aggressive.
That's right. They're a progressive nationalist party. So it's 2 things that I guess don't often go together. They do in this case. So they're progressive in the sense that they're for social justice. They're for clean government. They're for progressive taxation, some degree of redistribution of income, taking care of the poor, etc. And they're nationalistic in the view that they don't want to compromise on issues of national pride. They don't want to give up anything further in negotiations with Serbia. They might want to take back some of the things that previous governments have conceded. And their view, and this I think is the thing that worries me, there's still a Serb minority in Kosovo. And it's been quite peaceful for the last several years. unclear how the new government will behave toward them and toward the institutions that Serbia still operates irritatingly on Kosovo's territory. So there is some potential for conflict.
Let's remind the listener or tell the listener that Koti was once a very radical activist. He's banned from running as an MP because he has a criminal conviction for letting off tear gas in the parliament, but his party can nonetheless elect him as PM. Tim Judah, what do you make of the election?
Well, it was entirely predictable. I mean, we saw this from the opinion polls. We knew this was coming. And to remind listeners, I mean, as you mentioned, he was actually prime minister already last year. And then he was effectively turfed out of office thanks to prodding from the Trump administration. He refused to kind of fall into line with things that the Trump administration wanted with reference to dealing with Serbia, which was entirely self-serving for the Trump administration. It wasn't really of interest to Serbia or to Kosovo, but thanks to the Trump administration, they turfed him out.
And so Trump wanted him out of the way in order to claim peace in Kosovo
as a foreign policy success. Well, they wanted a foreign policy success. Then they signed a whole list of raft of things in the White House, most of which had absolutely nothing to do with Kosovo and Serbia. You know, they related to declaring Hamas a terrorist organization, recognition of Kosovo by Israel and Kosovo embassy in Jerusalem, which may well be fine, but it had nothing to do with relations between Kosovo and Serbia. But as a result, the Vetoven dossier, Albin Kurti, his party, which got 26% of the vote in 2019, appears to have got 48-49% now. So, in that sense, it's kind of it backfired. I mean, remains to be seen. I mean, there's about a lot of kind of sort of jubilation, etc., coming from Kosovo today. But I mean, one of the things that they need to do is to elect a president. And even if they have a majority in parliament, which they probably won't, but even if they have a majority in parliament, it's not enough because you need 2/3 of deputies in parliament to elect a president. So we could be in for some definite political ructions in the weeks to come.
Okay, so the Trump administration fail in their manoeuvring. What will Washington, the new Washington, the Biden Washington, feel about all this, please, Tim?
Well, the Biden administration, which would regard Kosovo as issue 3000 on their list of things to think about, will, when it thinks about it, be very happy about this. Albin Kurti actually made a clip for social media in which he appealed to Albanian voters in America to vote for Biden. Biden is, of course, comes from the sort of, you know, the Clintonite past, and Bill Clinton led the bombing of Serbia in 1999, and which led to Kosovo's independence. The Biden administration will be, I think, pleased to see what's happened, but I don't think that Kosovo is going to be a priority of theirs anytime soon. I was going to say that one thing that is probably going to change is that whereas the previous administration was kind of open, they didn't say that they were actually pro, but they were kind of open to the idea of land swaps and territorial exchanges between Kosovo and Serbia as part of a final deal. I think that's very likely to be completely off the agenda now with the election of Mr. Biden.
Marco, Serbia, Kosovo at a standstill. How might reconciliation happen?
Well, I'd go a bit further than Tim. I think not only are land swaps is one of the possible ways in which you could have a compromise between Belgrade and Pristina off the table, I think almost everything else is also off the table. Kurti has never seemed interested in the dialogue. All of the things that he's said about it in the past have been critical and negative. He's made clear what he didn't like about the way his predecessors ran the show, but he's never come up with his own vision, and it's clearly a low priority for him. What he wants to do is to focus on internal affairs and consolidating Kosovo. So you're going to have two very strong leaders who are not keen on coming to a deal, and I think the dialogue is going to be, you know, they might go to Brussels to talk. They won't agree on anything.
But there could be some inducements for Serbia, billions in development assistance, and an assurance of rapid EU membership.
Yeah, that is, I think, what some in Kosovo would like to see happen, and possibly some in Serbia as well, also some in the international community. It's hard to see that flying, though, because a quirk of the Serbian system is that in order to recognize Kosovo, they have to have a referendum to amend their constitution. So the government can't do it by itself. They have to bring the people along with it. So you have to present a deal that can win majority support among the voters. And giving up land, which, you know, let's remember, Kosovo, for better or for worse, is historically part of the Serbian national myth. It's where important parts of their medieval state were located. So it's really a kind of issue of national pride for them. It's hard to give that up for money. And it's also hard to see the European Union in its current anti-enlargement mood giving Serbia any real acceleration on the path to membership. Serbia is nowhere near ready to be a member. It is a deeply corrupt, quite dysfunctional system that nobody in Europe wants to see join until it's carried out really thorough reforms that will take it many years.
Back to you, Tim. Countries that have lived through a civil war have different ways of making peace. South Africa, of course, its Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Rwanda had village courts. Any hope of that sort of process in this situation?
I think that a previous president did actually start a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, but I remember it being sort of launched with much fanfare, and I've never heard of it since. But in general terms, no, I don't really think so. I think kind of people live kind of separate lives. Various opinion polls show that Serbs and Albanians in Serbia and in Kosovo generally have a pretty kind of low opinion of one another. And as in the rest of the region, everybody thinks that when somebody from their own side is convicted of war crimes, that international courts and international justice is completely unfair, and that everything was done to them, and that their people never did anything. So I don't really think that there's going to be much chance of a sort of happy outcome and reconciliation in the foreseeable future.
Marco, people must be very tired of it, and of course for many it's ancient history. It happened 20, 25 years ago.
Yeah, but it's still present. You know, that comment is more apropos for Kosovo. It's famously the youngest country in Europe. The median age, I think, is something like 30. So most of the people there, you know, more than half, have no memory of the war. And yet still, they're not in a forgiving mood. Tim's quite right. They have a low opinion of Serbs on average, and it's mutual. And they're not forgiving for good reason. They feel quite rightly that they're not treated fairly, that this status of being, you know, neither here nor there internationally, they're one of the only people in Europe who still need to apply for a visa to travel to the European Union. There are countries in Latin America that don't have to do that.
Tim, you've been looking into another aspect, which is the mass exodus of people from the Balkans generally, a very significant brain drain.
Well, it's not just a question of brain drain, it's a question of manpower in general. And yes, I have. I mean, Marco's right, Kosovo has the sort of youngest population in Europe, but it is also a shrinking population. There's no country in the Balkans, in fact, I don't think there's any country in Europe apart from the Faroe Islands, which is not a full country either, like Kosovo, funny enough, but which has a birth rate, a fertility rate of over 2.1. So, you know, basically you need a fertility rate. You need people to have, women to have more than, just over more than two children to replace your population. And that is not happening anywhere in Europe. And it's certainly not happening in Eastern Central Europe and the Balkans. And on current projections, I'm looking a little bit wider now, Bulgaria will have almost, well, 38% fewer people in 2050, so less than 20 years, 30 years, that will have 38% fewer people than it did in 1990. Serbia will have 23% fewer, Croatia 22%. Romania, 30%. Moldova has already lost, today has already lost a third of its population. So all of Southeastern Europe, you know, these are countries with shrinking populations. They have low birth rates, high rates of emigration, and of course, no immigration, which Western countries have to make up for their low birth rates.
And Marco, in a few seconds we have left, I guess that there are some people who yearn for the old Yugoslavia.
Yeah, they remember it as things being better back then. They weren't, but you know, there was a lot more security, you know, safe jobs. There was more social equality, so fewer ostensibly rich people, especially people in positions of power. So things were more stable. And also, it's just the hazy glow of nostalgia, I think, that covers over the fact that, you know, life in socialist Yugoslavia was not a tea party.
Thank you both very much for coming on. Marco Prelec, analyst with the International Crisis Group. And thank you, Tim Judah, journalist covering the Balkans for The Economist.